Welcome to Beyond the Blockchain with Scott Tindall, a discussion of blockchain technology, cryptocurrency, and why it matters to you.
Hey, folks. Welcome into the show. Thanks for joining us tonight, as we do every Wednesday night at 7 p.m. here on 106.5 FM Talk. And if you're listening to this on the podcast, we appreciate you listening in as well. I think we got a really fun show for everyone today. I know I'm really excited. We've talked a lot about decentralized wireless and what we call DY, and we've talked about the various different projects. And today we'll get a chance to visit with Joey Hiller, who is from the Helium Foundation, and he will be able to tell us a whole lot more about the practicality of the Helium network, of the sensors, and ways that we can all deploy those. So hope you'll stick around and listen to Joey here in just a few minutes. I had a chance to meet him when I was in Austin a few weeks ago, and I think everyone here is going to be really excited to hear from him, and it's going to be a pleasure for us to get to have him on the show. But let's jump into a little bit of the headlines. You know, here on the Gulf Coast, we're all thinking about, you know, the storm that's happening down in Florida. We've been through those, and we've lived through those, and it's a pretty tragic situation down there. And so, you know, any of the kind of stories we talk about today are kind of all, you know, muted a little bit by our friends down in Florida and what they're going through. There's actually, you know, some pretty interesting projects in Web3 that are related to weather as well. And, you know, we'll talk about that some with Helium and some of the weather data. And there's some new weather projects coming out. Normally, Johnny's on with me, you know, and he and I can bounce around those, and you get Johnny's good idea on how he feels about some of these weather projects. I want to remind everybody that you are able to call in and text in. We'd love to have you. It's join us on the text line. And also, we'll take your questions on Twitter at the back half of the show as well. Also, today in the news, with crypto news, you know, we talk a lot about this show, on this show, about being cocktail party dangerous, knowing just enough to know to get you through the conversations you may be having at work or, you know, at a party somewhere. You're going to hear the name Do Kwon. It's the co-founder of Luna, and he's now wanted, I believe, in about 190 different countries. So Interpol's on the lookout for him. Meanwhile, he's posting on Twitter about what you know, how he's not hiding and he's not running. So you will probably hear about that. That'll be a question people ask, you know, because a lot of people immediately when they start talking about crypto and Web3, they want to get straight into the what makes things juicy. Which is a lot of time criminal activity. And so that's unfortunate. But like we talk about, there's no more criminal activity in this space than any other space. It's just a lot more visible when it happens over here. You know, here at Beyond the Blockchain, we just want to talk about the good things that are happening and the ways that we're all building together and the things that we can build together. With that in mind, another thing that is happening here locally is we're actually going to have deployment of Helium and Pollen Mobile throughout the community and throughout our businesses. And specifically, one business that I'm launching is called Tram the Town. And I'm kind of taking these Universal Studios trams that my friend Jim Walker has owned. And they're the original trams from Universal, like back in the early 60s. And we're going to take these trams and we're going to put them on the road. We're going to have fun and we're going to create tours again, a lot like what I used to do with the Ducks. But the interesting thing here is we're going to take 1960s trams. We're going to combine them with modern technology, with audio visual, you know, Pimp My Ride style. But what we're also going to do is add some of this Web3 technology to it. We'll be able to actually monitor a lot of different information about the tram through the Helium network and the different sensors we're going to deploy. And we'll talk to Joey about that. And we're also going to be able to help monitor the Pollen network as well as we use these trams to help validate the different individual hotspots. And, you know, something that we'll talk about with Joey as well is how this system works, how this network works, and how you as an individual can use your hotspot or your commercial business or your location that has a good line of sight to be a part of this network and help us grow the network, but also the different sensors we can use. And whether that is keeping up with a lost dog or smart water sensors or some of the many other things that we're talking about, I want you to think through all the different ways that these crypto projects are going to start to impact our lives. I know a lot of times we talk about, when is this going to be practical? And as well, I try and, you know, talk about and tweet about or write about is, when is it going to be practical? And the answer is right now, every day, even though it doesn't necessarily feel like it. But what we'll be able to do through this show is help you learn when those opportunities do exist and how you can take advantage of them. And then you'll be one of the first ones to get out there in front with some of this emerging technology and really start to transform your businesses. I was actually having a conversation this morning with the mayor of a local community, and we got to talking about the smart meters. And I think a lot of people just don't really understand the full capability. And once they do, I think we're going to see a pretty big, quick shift in momentum toward these IoT smart sensors and the way that our communities are going to move forward in an efficient manner that makes everybody's life easier. There's just no reason not to take advantage of this time and, you know, use these resources and get out on the front edge. We're not going to solve 21st century problems with 20th century solutions. So that's what we got to have, 21st century solutions. All right, when we come back from the break, we're going to bring in Mr. Joey Hiller, and we're going to talk about helium and the Helium Foundation. Just a second, folks. See you soon.
Welcome back to Beyond the Blockchain with Scott Tindall.
Hey, folks, welcome back to the show. I appreciate you sticking with us. And another wonderful Wednesday night here on FM Talk 106.5. If you're listening live, we appreciate you. You can always text in questions at 251-343-0106. And we'll be happy to answer those questions for you on the air. And if you're following along on the podcast, we appreciate you joining us from wherever you get your favorite podcast and maybe even YouTube. But let's move on to the star of the show and someone I am just thankful to have gotten a chance to get to know. And I am very impressed with this person and the work they do and the way they represent the industry. And so it makes me happy to bring on Joey Hiller. How are you, sir?
Hey, I'm doing well. Good to be chatting with you again, Scott.
Excellent, sir. So, Joey, you're with the Helium Foundation. Now, our listeners are familiar with helium. You know, we've talked a pretty good bit about it. But why don't you tell us a little bit about the Helium Foundation and kind of the work that you're specifically doing there?
Yeah, so I'm sort of serving as the technical director at the Helium Foundation right now. That sort of translates into touching a whole lot of different parts of the network and how we present ourselves. Helium Foundation itself sort of has a couple of main things that it likes to oversee. So we involve ourselves a lot with ecosystem development, education and advocacy, oversight of the project, governance processes. So we try to involve our community as much as possible in decision-making needs to happen. One of the fun things that I guess I'll call out is I'm really proud of this, that it's a 501c6. We're a U.S.-based nonprofit, which is fairly unique in the blockchain space.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting and something that our listeners really gravitate towards as well. Because we talk a lot about how do you know who you can trust and how do you know who you can't trust. So just to give you an idea, Joey, on how my three rules and why I'm so bullish on Helium and DY is kind of my three rules are this. First off, I want to know that the founders are public, right? Like that's just an important rule for any project I'm looking at all. The second is that they've got a great use case, you know, and they're solving problems. And to me, that's the most important part. And then the third is, are there other people who have gotten on board and are backing them? Because a lot of these VC groups are way smarter than I am, and they've obviously done their due diligence. So if it meets all three of those criteria, then, you know, that's the type of project that we like to talk about here. And so this whole idea of, you know, just through the time we've been able to visit, getting to know people in the Helium ecosystem, it makes you feel good knowing that you're dealing with real people and you're not just dealing with, you know, anonymous usernames out on the internet or ones and zeros all the time. So I think that's a great point that you made.
A ton of confusing stuff at you that you can't can understand and hopes that you don't ask any questions, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's one of the giant red flags, you know. Well, Joey, with your work there at the Helium Foundation, they're handling the technical side and really understanding the sensors and the mapping. And, you know, I know you sent me a little custom made mapper, and I appreciate that because I've been just mapping all over town everywhere I go. Just even today, I was mapping this tram route to make sure that I had coverage. And if not, you know, how do I supplement coverage? Can you tell us a little bit about your work there on the technical side and the sensors that you see are coming about that are going to really impact people's lives personally?
Yeah, well, I'll kind of add a little bit to your last question as well as answer that question. So I've been sort of a part of the Helium community for a really long time, which is, you know, part of getting to know the team and seeing these are real people and really passionate about building this. While I was part of the community, I built that Mappers project. So I applied for a grant from the Helium Foundation, formerly known as the DY Alliance, and built that out just sort of in my free time, mostly while I was on vacation in Hawaii. And then a couple months later, joined the team as a sort of full-time employee. So that product itself ends up being a really useful tool for folks that are trying to understand if the Helium network is a viable option for them when they're setting up sensors or trying to use the network, because they can see the real on-the-ground coverage. It's not simulated. It's truly packets that have gone over the network.
And if people want to see that, they can get a real-time look at it by going to explorer.helium.com, right? To get the URL right?
So Explorer will show you where all of the hotspots
are. Oh, sorry, Mappers. It's mappers.helium.com?
That's the one. Yeah, mappers.helium.com. And it's actually a real-time map. So as those hexagons get filled in, you'll sort of see them pop onto the screen.
Yeah, and for any of our listeners, if they go to mappers.helium.com, they can probably see a lot of the places that I travel frequently because I keep the mapper with me just about everywhere I go. So,
me too.
Yeah, I appreciate that. When we were in Austin and I saw what you were doing, I was just completely fascinated and wanted to be a part of that. So I appreciate you introducing me to that concept. And it makes a really big difference when you're looking at your projects that you're laying out from a use case perspective and the different sensors that you're going to need and you're going to use. I mean, for instance, you know, I mentioned this earlier in the show that I was talking to a municipality about introducing, you know, smart water sensors into their community. Well, without the Mappers project, we don't know if we have adequate coverage or not. So that's a huge tool. And hopefully as people learn more about the network and start to look at the different use cases that they want to, you know, put into play for their own personal lives, they'll be able to use that tool as well. And if we have a gap in coverage, you know, then let's figure out a way to, you know, fix that gap in coverage, because that's a problem that's easily solvable.
Yeah. And one of the things that the Mappers tool does really well is gives the sense of the metric of redundancy. So if you click on any one of those hexes, you see all these yellow lines show up, and that's telling you how many gateways are providing redundant coverage to that area. And so it's a really interesting story for people going and using the network. You have to worry about, like, is this gateway going to go offline? And the cool thing with Helium is because of the density of deployment, two or three or four hotspots could go offline and you'd still be connected just fine, which is a really helpful story for folks evaluating the network.
I think that's a really great point, especially if you were a business owner who's trying to decide to invest in sensor technology, to know that you've got that redundant coverage, especially in regards to some of the more time-sensitive sensors that are, you know, being created. Yeah, Joey, one of the things down here that's super popular is seafood, right? If you're familiar with Forrest Gump, we are the home of Forrest Gump. So everything shrimp and everything Bubba, that is us. And so we have a large seafood industry down here. And when I was in Austin, I had a chance to see this prototype that was being developed on this sensor that looks like a sticker, but actually gives us, you know, accurate reading on temperature and whether or not we've breached different temperatures. Is that correct? Am I explaining it right?
Yeah, it's it's really cool. So you're talking about the Nano Things sort of temperature sensor, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. So they were actually giving those away. They had big boxes of them at Helium House in New York this past week, and I didn't grab one because I was too distracted having a bunch of other great conversations. But it's the coolest thing. It's probably 3 by 4 inches. It just looks like a shipping label. You tear a tab on that thing, slap it on the side of the box, and immediately it's broadcasting out information about the temperature of that device or the, you know, its environment. And the cool thing is that any hotspot picks that data up, it's going to relay it back to you. So if you send out a box and somebody leaves it in the back of their truck overnight and it starts getting warm, you don't want to go open up that because, you know, shrimp, seafood, that would be a bad thing. Your customer would be upset with you. So this would tell you basically when and where that shipment was delayed and if it went over temperature.
I think that is such a crucial tool. I mean, one of my previous experiences has been owning a restaurant, and we were very heavy in seafood. We did po' boys, and so shrimp and fresh seafood was so important to what we were doing. We were pretty fortunate being on the Gulf Coast that we could get it directly from the distributor. But knowing that your seafood is fresh, I mean, that's invaluable for a restaurateur. It's just such a unique tool. And then from a, you know, more broad sense, I've just seen a lot going on with package tracking, asset location. Can you talk a little bit about where the industry is going there and what that can mean for our ability to keep up with, you know, stuff that we're, you know, hoping gets to our desired location?
Yeah, asset tracking is actually one of the easiest things to kind of wrap your head around with what things you can do on the Helium network. Because our coverage is so much bigger than any other LoRaWAN network, the protocol that we develop on, that's ever existed, folks are starting to look at asset tracking and say, like, wow, we can actually do this. So there's existing devices that are out on the market. Previously, they were sort of used in small confined spaces, so, you know, things like university campuses or corporate campuses, things like that. But now you can throw one of these things on a truck or a bike or a scooter and go clear across town or clear across country, and you still have that same coverage that you would have back home.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, when you're looking at maybe more of a rural deployment where you wish you had access to the internet, but it just doesn't make sense from a cost perspective to put a, you know, maybe an LTE card on that device, to be able to track an asset and use the Helium network at a, you know, pretty low cost in comparison to the other ways to do it, seems pretty remarkable to me, especially considering you could kit out your entire place, whether it was, you know, entry and exit sensors to smart water to everything else that, you know, you can run on. I feel like you could do a rural deployment and make a pretty big impact pretty fast just by having your own hotspot there, honestly.
Yeah, I'd be really curious to poll your listeners and ask how much they thought an asset tracker would cost. Because they would probably be surprised at how much you can build one for. So I think I've put together asset trackers personally just with parts you can buy on the internet for about $20 to $30.
That's pretty incredible.
And then the really exciting thing is that by using Helium's deployment of LoRaWAN, the Helium network, you can transfer all of that data for less than $1 a year. So each packet is really small and costs really little, and it allows for really inexpensive connectivity. There's no SIM card cost or anything else on top of that. It's just really looking for that data transfer.
And that's pretty remarkable, because as our community continues to embrace, you know, this DY movement and Helium, we've got pretty good coverage, but it's going to get substantially better. But now we're basically saying that we can do any asset tracking for $20 to $30 per tracker, and then $1 a year. I mean, typically, if I need to do some asset tracking, I'm going to have to do, you know, a SIM card on it. It's going to cost me at least $40 a month. Now, all of a sudden, it's starting to make a lot more sense for me to track my fleet, for me to start tracking equipment and things that previously I might not have wanted to invest in. I think, you know, that's going to be a pretty big market there. And I think that people are going to be all over that as they learn more about it.
Yeah, really cool, like, anecdotal story there. One of the guys that owns this company, CalChip Connect, put some asset trackers in his crab pot. Somebody stole his crab pots out of the ocean, and he saw them pop up in a marina here in the San Francisco Bay Area, went and grabbed the fish and game guy and got his crab pots back, and the fish and game person was just in awe.
That is
the solution that existed.
What a great way to lead us into the break, Joey. You teed me up perfectly because all of our listeners know about their crab traps and leaving them out there and hoping nobody poaches the crabs out of your trap while you're gone. Now we can track them. Practicality here on the Helium Network. When we come back, Joey's going to talk to us a little bit more about the fun things that are going on in this industry and ways you can get involved.
Welcome back to Beyond the Blockchain with Scott Tindall.
Hey, folks, welcome back to the show here on 106.5 FM Talk on Wednesday nights live. We've got Joey Heeler from the Helium Foundation. Joey, I think one thing that's really interesting is people want to ask, you know, when is, you know, blockchain or crypto going to be practical to them? And I think the fact that we're having this conversation on terrestrial radio in a mid-market on the Gulf Coast speaks volumes for the onboarding of non-crypto natives and just everyday folks. What do you think?
We all around you and you don't even realize it.
Yeah. So it's just happening all around us. One of the things we've talked about before is, you know, the fact that, you know, we're a major port city here. And, you know, last I saw, close to 80% of all the world's goods are being tracked on the blockchain through, you know, the system that Maersk and their partners are running. So, you know, if you're getting a shipment from Amazon, you're dealing with blockchain already.
It's pretty exciting stuff.
Joey, you're out there on the front lines every day creating new things, which is one of the reasons that I just love following you on Twitter and watching everything you do. Where do you see the next wave of sensors that get onboarded pretty fast? I mean, what do you think is right here on the cusp of being in almost, you know, as many homes as possible?
Yeah, I mean, it's always a really interesting thing, like where it's going to go next. The Helium Network is like very, very new when you're looking at sort of the hardware space. Like, it takes a little bit of time to build hardware. The Helium Network has only really been at like a commercial viable scale. It's getting really enticing within just the past year, I would say. So a lot of folks are noticing that and just really heads down on trying to build solutions and leverage the network that just something of this size never existed before. As far as the stuff that I'm excited about, I probably talk about 10 different things in a day. There's so many cool things. It can be as simple as a moisture sensor for your garden or a little switch on your mailbox that sends you a text message when your mail's been dropped off or something, to being as complex as all statewide deployments or wildfire detection or cattle tracking, or, you know, we talked about these smart things labels that are, sorry, the nano things labels that will notify you if your cold assets have gone over temperature.
It's really interesting. I think that I grew up in the 80s, showing my age, but, you know, in the 80s, we had this vision of the future that everything was all interconnected. We didn't know to call it the internet, I don't think, but we kind of had this vision of what the future was going to be. And I think now we're starting to have that become a reality. I mean, I think, you know, pretty soon, we'll all have smart meters. Every new house will just be built with all this IoT smart technology that is just ingrained in the way we do life. And it'll happen very slowly and then very quickly all at once.
Yeah, and I think it's also really important. Like, nobody wants to get notified, you know, from text message every time somebody opens the refrigerator, but it's the time that your refrigerator stops working. Like, that's going to be that moment where you're, wow, I wish I had known about that before I went to go make dinner. Or we've got folks that work with food kitchens who, they get a lot of sort of secondhand equipment, and sometimes it goes down. Those people rely on that equipment to work, and so they have to know when that stuff becomes inoperable.
Yeah, that's a great point.
Letting them know as soon as possible is a world of difference.
You're hitting the nail right on the head there. One of the best things I've seen from a practicality standpoint are these sensors for your commercial kitchens and for your coolers. Because previously being a restaurateur, like, if you lose power and your freezer, you know, starts to thaw and you lose all that inventory, it's not just like an immediate problem, but it becomes a massive long-term problem as well, trying to get back on track. And so to be able to salvage that, you know, food or the meat or seafood or whatever you have in that cooler just makes a massive difference. And I know we've seen some, you know, of these chains and franchises jump on, but I think what you're going to see very quickly, Joey, just talking to restaurant and hospitality and tourism people, I think you're going to see a chain reaction really fast. You know, you're going to get one chain on board, and the next thing, it's a copycat game, and we're just going to see everybody in the industry pretty soon using some kind of remote technology to monitor, you know, those kitchens, even in places where previously they didn't think that investment was worth it.
Yeah, we're already starting to see some big names sort of come through the inbox. I'm really excited to see people notice the value here. It's good for the network. It's good for customers because the price point is so affordable. I guess one clarifying thing, my role at the foundation, like, I don't sell anything, which is really exciting position to be in. Our sort of number one driving force is just to make sure that people are recognizing and like using the network. So I don't have to say like, oh, sign up for this or pay us a thing. It's just like, consider this as an option. Like, if it works for you, you should go use it.
Yeah, that's a very liberating place to be. And it also allows you to be far more authentic about your, you know, pitch, more or less. Because at the end of the day, it is a pitch. You're not pitching a product, but you are pitching network usage. And it provides a level of authenticity that I appreciate, especially in this industry where we're not always sure if we're, you know, getting what we were sold.
Yeah. And like, we talk about asset trackers. I love my AirTags, right? Those aren't helium devices, but they're really good for my keys and, you know, some close to home type stuff. But it's not a solution that scales. And sometimes it's important to not have to rely on cell phones. So helium, LoRaWAN, cellular, like, they all sort of have their place for various deployments and various use cases. But I get really excited about, you know, all of those things that LoRaWAN is just the perfect fit for because it solves a lot of problems.
All right. So that's a really good point. Give us the 2-minute understanding of LoRaWAN. I think our listeners know, but I think your explanation is going to be better. And then after that, I'm going to follow up with a hypothetical scenario on we're going to build out a hunting camp. But go ahead and tell us what LoRaWAN is, kind of in your expert, you know, explanation.
Yeah. I could go real deep, but I'm not going to. So LoRaWAN, at its simplest way to sort of understand it, is a protocol that excels at leveraging open spectrum. So this is the same thing your old cordless phone ran on. To transfer data over really, really long distances at low power and low bandwidth. So little bits of data that need to go really far on devices that last years or literally forever. I'm building a device right now that has no batteries in it, which is incredibly exciting.
That sounds like magic to me. You're talking about a device with no batteries. I'm just going to trust you because you know more than I do about that. All right. So let's talk about this practically, because now I think we're moving into like some practical understanding that I can wrap my head around. So let's say I've got a rural farm or I've got a hunting camp, and I can put up a helium hotspot, provide LoRaWAN coverage for myself if it doesn't already exist. And now, for maybe $20 or $30 per asset, I can track, you know, any asset I want and know wherever it is, I can know where it is in almost real time for $1 a year, right? Am I tracking all that correctly?
When I say $1 a year, we're talking about a device that is sending data on a pretty high frequency.
Yeah, so like what, maybe every 5 minutes, 10 minutes, an hour?
An hour? Oh, yeah, even cheaper.
Oh, yeah. So, I mean, with that in mind, you know, I think there's just a tremendous amount of opportunities there, whether you're putting a smart meter on a feed trough, or we've seen that, right, on water troughs for cattle. We've seen some of these smart sensors on ingress, egress on the gates, on the different barns. It gets pretty interesting when you start to think about kitting out, you know, a farm or a ranch just for yourself, because then having that internal network gets really cheap, really fast. And what we haven't talked about, because, you know, we don't talk much about this, but if they do own their own helium hotspot, they're actually earning, you know, HNT, they're earning rewards for providing this coverage for themselves.
Yeah. That's one of the sort of magical things about it. We talked about that dollar a year. If all of that data is going through your hotspot, you're the one getting paid for it.
Yeah. So basically it is a self paying infrastructure that rewards you as you deploy more sensors. Mm-hmm. That's a pretty interesting loop there that I don't think exists in very many business models.
To clarify, you wouldn't necessarily earn any money running your own data through your own hotspots, because you had to pay for it in the first place.
So yeah.
It just comes back around to you.
That's right. We can get into the details when we come back. But Joey, you're right on the money, man. I appreciate you being here. If you'll stick around real quick, we'll just a couple more minutes when we come back from the break.
Welcome back to Beyond the Blockchain with Scott Tindall.
Hey, folks, welcome back to Beyond the Blockchain. We're live here on 106.5 FM Talk. And we're joined tonight by Joey Hiller from the Helium Foundation. Joey, we've had a great opportunity to talk about the different practical uses that we are seeing onboarded. Let's talk about ways that people can follow along, learn more, and be a part. What's the best way for people to become a part of the Helium ecosystem?
Yeah, so it's a pretty low bar. You can run your own sensors, of course. We talked all about that. You can just get involved in the community. So we have a big channel online where folks come in and chat. And then there's also communities on Twitter and sort of other social media platforms. And then, of course, the biggest thing to contribute is to help build out this global network that we're building. So you can do that by buying a Helium hotspot and setting it up in your home or office at a friend's house. We see folks put big antennas on them and put them really high on their roof, just extend that coverage even further. We also see people put them in a windowsill and just keep that stock antenna on there, and that provides great local coverage as well. There was actually, you had an ad on for the Deep South Ham Fest, and those folks are my jam. We've got a bunch of hams in the Helium community, and they set up some of the best Helium hotspots that I've seen, because they know their way around antennas and they know their RF. And it's really fun just seeing where the packets come in and how far that coverage can go.
So, yeah, that is OG wireless communication right there. the ham guys, and then I'm sure we get a bunch of CB radio guys, you know, around here as well. That's a great point. And to your point, if people do want to learn more about the Helium network and those deployment things, reach out to me personally. You can find me on Twitter or Facebook, or my email is just scott.tindle@gmail.com. And I'd be happy to visit with folks about that as well. Because I know there's a lot of questions that come up and people don't necessarily know how to get started and how to start approaching that. And, you know, Joey, I just am so optimistic about the space. I'm so optimistic about the future of Web3. And I think that one of the things that I'm most impressed with regarding the Helium community and a lot of the Web3 projects that, you know, we talk about on the show is just this concept of not looking at it day to day. Nobody here is looking, you know, at minute to minute results. We're all focusing on building for the future. And I appreciate the fact that you're doing that. And I think that's something that's very exciting.
Yeah. Everyone working on this project is just heads down, super excited about the opportunities that are opening up for it. It's so easy to get stuck in the day-to-day news, and I think most of our team is like uninstalled Twitter from their phones and things like that, just because it's too much noise and it's distracting and it doesn't actually make any difference in the long run.
Yeah, that's a great point. And one of the things that we talked with our listeners about all the time is this concept of FUD and just kind of ignoring most of that, because it mostly is noise. But Joey, I want to end this on a positive note, man. I appreciate you being here. This has been fantastic. We're going to keep working on some use cases here along the Gulf Coast. And as we get these things deployed, love to have you join us again, you know, in the future. And we can talk, you know, kind of next steps and what further development looks like.
I'd love to come on again. This is a blast. And I'll just leave a plug, which is if folks want to follow along, Twitter's a really good spot if you're on there. I am at Jay Hiller, and I just posted a really cool thing today about somebody that was building a sensor to predict when an algae bloom might happen.
Hey, that matters to us down here on the coast, too. Any of these coastal, coastal environmental sensors, I think this is going to be right down our alley. I think we're going to get a lot of participation here and grow the network.
Yep, it's prime for it. It's great.
All right, buddy. Well, I appreciate you being here, and let's catch up soon. But as for now, go and follow Joey on Twitter at Jay Hiller, and follow the Helium Foundation, and get involved in the network, and start to, you know, meet some of these people, and you'll find that there are actually real people building these businesses, and that's a lot of fun. All right. Thanks, Joey. We'll talk soon, my friend. All right. Now coming into the show, we've got our friend Tate Richards. Tate, last we talked, we were getting ready. We were talking about Footium, and we were talking about your season, and you had a big match coming up. It's been a couple of weeks. So for those that don't remember, Tate is our friend, our correspondent. He played for AFC Mobile this summer, and he's a Web3 enthusiast. He understands this in ways that I'm trying to learn, because he just gets to speak a different language, being the young fellow that he is. Tate, welcome back into the show. We appreciate you being here. What's going on, man?
Hello, everyone. It's been a good couple of weeks. Like, the team's been doing well. Unfortunately, that really big game that we had coming up, I missed out on due to injury, and I'm still currently injured. But I'm almost fully recovered, so that's great. But no, other than that, stuff's been great. Like, recovery's been great, and the team's been doing well, which, you know, I can only be happy about. And I'm just excited to come back into the team and start making that difference again.
That's good, man. Well, we're glad. We need you healthy. We need you out there running around and giving us better updates.
100%.
All right, so you've been a little banged up, so had a little more time in front of the computer, I guess, you know, other than studying, right? Any updates on Footium? Are you feeling, are we still feeling good about this project? Is this something we still want to pursue?
No, yeah, 100%. I still see the validity, and kind of I'm not sure if everyone's aware, but there's a game called FIFA that's recently come out again, like this year's version, And it kind of just gives me the same kind of feeling, you know, FIFA being such a successful company and such a business with its games, kind of having millions and millions and millions of players. It kind of gives me the same feeling, but a bit more of an in-depth feeling, that, you know, with the whole academy aspect of it and stuff like that. Like, it's just such a great project that, you know.
It's like FIFA on steroids almost.
Pardon?
It's like FIFA on steroids, it feels like.
Almost, yeah. Like, it kind of just has that, the actual managerial aspect of it. Kind of.
Yeah, that. So down here on the coast, we call that lanyap. It means a little bit extra. Right, it's got that something extra, and good. I'm glad to hear that because I hadn't had a chance to really look into that as much. But I'm glad to hear that you're looking at it, and you know, I think that there's going to be more interest as we get closer to the World Cup this fall. You know, we've got a holiday World Cup, which is going to be weird. Tate, we're going to have a big come together before Black Friday here in the United States. So here in the United States, you know, we have Thanksgiving on Thursday, and then Black Friday is the largest shopping day. But do you also know what's happening on Black Friday this year?
No, I don't know.
It is the U.S. and England in group play in the cup. So,
really?
Yeah. So you got to prepare yourself for that. All right,
that's going to be interesting.
That's going to be something we keep up with.
Fortunate for me, given time, I'm still here practicing.
Well, unfortunately for us, it's probably not going to be a very close match. So I don't think we have much to worry about here on the American side, but you know, we're doing the best we can. And, you know, Tate, thanks for checking in. Next time we're going to talk more footium. We're going to get you healthy so we can talk more about that. And, I think we're going to have some pretty good conversations, Tate. I got some, interesting folks lined up for next week. I'm just going to tease it there. But as for now, folks, thanks for joining us, and we hope to see you next week on Beyond the Blockchain.